Rebecca.
And I'm Krabeshni.
And welcome to Building with Builders.
Our podcast where we believe that building is fun.
Super fun.
So much fun.
Build Her Collective was created to help women with building and renovating. And we believe that with the right tools, everyone can build. For us, it's all about encouraging women to take back control of the building process and really achieve their dreams.
We are women in the building industry, and as developers, builders, and project managers, it's our passion to share everything we know with other women doing the same. And that's why we've created this podcast for you.
So if you love all things building,
you're into design,
keen on the numbers,
about to renovate,
thinking and dreaming of that forever home and what it would look like,
or even developing for profit,
then you've found your family.
Subscribe to our podcast and follow our journey over at buildhercollective.com.au.
Today we have Samantha Wills from Samantha Wills Jewelry. She started an absolute empire, really kind of having her jewelry pieces across America, Hollywood, everywhere you'd see red carpet. She did an amazing job growing this fantastic business. And what we want to talk to her about today is how she grew that, some of the lessons she took out of it, but really how she came to kind of reevaluate her life and choose to close that down and pursue something that she's more passionate about or something that she feels is more fulfilling. So I hope you enjoy this. Welcome, Samantha. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me on. It's such a treat to be here.
Well, I was just wondering if you wouldn't mind kind of running us through a little bit of your journey. It's probably the last 15 years, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's been a journey indeed. So I started handmaking jewellery on my dining room table when I was 21 years old. You know, we started selling down at Bondi Beach Markets, which at the time was a kind of a launch pad for Australian designers. But in my mind, it was still just a hobby. And started selling down there and was, you know, working my normal 9-to-5 job through the week and then doing these kind of jewellery parties at night where I'd take my handmade jewellery over to people's houses and, you know, they'd then book parties, kind of like a Nutramedics, you know, Avon setup back in the day. And someone down at Bondi Markets, they were a distributor. So they were having a showroom wall at Australian Fashion Week where they would display different brands and show to retailers. And they said, oh, you know, I've got this spot. It's about the size of a door. If you're interested, if you want to, you know, present your collections there. I was like, oh, collection? No, this is just a hobby. You know, I couldn't do that. And then offered it to me for $500. And I was like, oh, you know, and then, you know, there's a series of events, which I talk about in the book, but I ended up taking the spot. And I think I had $509 in my bank account at the time. And I was like, all right, I'll take it and, you know, hopefully make one order back to cover the costs and get some, you know, marketing and promotion out of it. And ended up writing $17,000 worth of orders. So I was like, oh, shit, all right, I guess I'm a jewellery designer now, and quit my normal job the next day. And, you know, at 22, 23 years old was, you know, running this business from my dining table. And, you know, over the course of 15 years, I met my business partner, and with his business mind and my creative one, we went on to have a really successful commercially creative venture. I spent the last 10 years or so in New York. We had the brand over there and, you know, got to 15 years into that journey and realized that creatively my soul was wanting to do something else. So, you know, made the biggest decision of my life, but the calmest, and that was to close the business and not sell it. And we closed in at the start of 2019. So it's been a journey to that point.
Samantha also has a book out and it's called Of Gold and Dust, and it's amazing. I've read it and it's really great to hear the story from an unassuming point of view. I guess what I liked about it is you were pretty raw in the fact that you didn't know what you were doing and you were taking opportunity as it came and you were working tirelessly, but sometimes those things you were working on didn't pan out because we all make mistakes.
Right. And I think when we're in that zone, we hold on to this idea of what it's meant to look like. So we put our head down, we're working towards this one pinpoint of right or wrong in our mind. Whereas, you know, if we surrendered that a little bit and kind of looked around at what was unfolding along the way, and I know myself, you know, I'd hold on to something so tight and anything outside of that was a pass or fail. And it was just like a very anxiety-ridden way to exist, I think, for a long time.
Yeah, and also especially with, you know, Instagram and all these things, the ideals of what people, you know, what their lives actually look like often aren't realistic. you know, business owners and homeowners and people who live in these places that I look at, their lives don't reflect what you're thinking they reflect.
Not at all. And I think, you know, when I was writing the book, that's what I hope the underlying message is. It's like, hey, here's what you might have seen in the media or of the brand milestones, but it takes a human to run a business, and there's a human element to that, and that's the stories behind the story.
And humans are always flawed, right? So not saying you're flawed, but like,
I'm very flawed.
but there's that personal ebb and flow and emotion that comes behind it as well. And we don't always have our shit together, and we don't always have that kind of calm, cool, collected business person on.
No, not at all. And I think, you know, as you said, in this age of Instagram, it's an age of perceived perfection. And two issues with that is, one, when we look, you know, on Instagram as the example, we go into this compare and despair that, you know, oh my life doesn't look like theirs, but theirs doesn't really look like theirs either. It's a complete hologram that is the business of Instagram. And second to that, in this perceived perfection, we can often find ourselves scared to show up imperfect, which is truly what we are. As we said, we're flawed as humans. And to not, you know, to have that fear of showing up imperfectly often sees us get stuck in that procrastination or in, you know, imposter syndrome of really not doing anything because we're so scared to do anything, if that makes sense.
Yeah, perfect sense. And I guess that was one of the things that resonated me about your book, and something that when we speak to people, we hear a lot. It's like, well, I'm not good enough to do that because I couldn't do that. I'm not like this person. And I'm like, well, you were really the person that a lot of people would look to, right? So Samantha's in New York living the life. She's in her 30s. She's out. She's at all the major events. Her jewelry collections are on red carpets and worn by stars. I mean, that's the ideal lifestyle, isn't it?
I mean, yes, if that's the lifestyle you're looking for.
If that's the view from the outside, right?
Well, and I think it's like the entire, in 2016, for example, I launched a foundation called the Samantha Wills Foundation, which essentially I wanted to give voice to the realities of business. And I launched it very much as a side project. You know, the jewelry was still the main thing that I was doing. And the response that I got from people being like, oh my God, yes, that's the hurdles I face. That's why I cry in the shower. That's what gives me anxiety too. And it was then that I really started to see the importance of sharing our true vulnerable stories, especially as it related to women in business. And it's been a mission of mine. It's something I'm so incredibly passionate about. And I think that in a few years' time, if not even now, people are going to be taking legal action, I believe, against social media in ways that impact mental health and that side of things in such a significant way. And there's so much that we have to be doing as a responsibility now on those platforms.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's so powerful coming from you, because from the outside, or if you list those credentials, it sounds so idyllic. But when you read your book and your journey, and kind of you talk about the emotions and how your life felt while you were living that idealized lifestyle from the outside, you could see you were struggling.
Yeah, well, and I think at the end of the day, it's human. And, you know, the original working title for the book was Public Brand, Private Life. So I really wanted to parallel the two of those. And, you know, while it's, you know, while we see the milestones and then we see kind of the hurdles of business, I'm like, it's the human element that we're kind of missing, because, you know, as women in business, when we're in heartache or when we're in grief or in trauma, like the world doesn't stop spinning for us. It's like, you know, you still got to show up in some capacity. You can't call in sick to the boss if you are the boss, kind of thing. So we're really adding that human element, because I think we've missed that the last few years.
And I think especially in this kind of really instant age, it can feel, or it certainly does for me, a little bit unrelenting. It's like there are so many different ways that people can get in touch with you, and you want to help everyone, but then you're also open to all this information. And then to pair that out and understand what's really important is really tricky, because you've got all these kind of inputs and noise. So, yeah.
It's exhausting. Like, I'm like, who keeps inventing these TikToks and all these new platforms? I'm like, they moved the button on Instagram. I'm like, I'm not even sure how to upload at the moment. So like, everyone needs to calm down on the app development, okay?
I know, I feel the same. And I get it, because it's going to be really good for those early adapters, but for people who are already inundated or feeling overwhelmed, it can be really tricky to, you know, feel like you have to keep up with everyone, but I don't think you actually do. You know, one of the things that I thought was so incredibly brave was to do that kind of, and I get that it came from a point of flex for you, but talk to us about the point where you closed the business and really decided that your value is more than that in different ways.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when you ever so modestly name a business after yourself, you assume that that's your lot in life. And you definitely assume that when the business continues to grow and it's profitable and, you know, it's all the things you've always wanted it to be. By 2016, so 13 years into that journey, I designed 11,000 pieces of jewelry. And, you know, I was designing at that point with my hands and not my heart. And I think as a creative person, it's your lifeblood. That energy flow of creativity is what gets you up in the morning. And I noticed mine starting to dim. That light was flickering out a little bit. And, you know, at 11,000 pieces of jewelry in, you're like, all right, well, I know this feeling. It's a creative block. It's happened before. You know, I've just got to push through. So you kind of keep pushing and another six months. So after about a year and a half, I'm like, this is a big problem. Like I was operating robotically because it was such a commercial enterprise at that point. I thought I was at the stage where I'm like, I just need to find how to get creativity back for jewelry. That was my thought process. And so, you know, I tried every which way. At that point, I had done 100 flights between New York and Sydney. I was on a plane every other week. Like it was a frenetic pace at that point. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to take some time out. And I went to an upstate retreat and I was just going to take a week out just to try and really like get my shit back together. And it was up there that my business partner, he and I would send each other observational emails 4 times a year, which had nothing to do with the P&L. They were completely, as the title, observational emails of, you know, how we felt things were going in the business. And he's like, you know, I know you're at this retreat. I know you're sorting through some stuff. Do you want me to send you my email? I was like, yeah, send it while I'm up here. You know, I'd like to go through it. So I was only checking my emails, you know, in the evening, and I'd walked this like beautiful, kind of like, you know, the scene in Dirty Dancing where they go and stays for the summer. It was like a setup like that, like wood cabins and, you know, really beautiful. So I'm walking back to my cabin and there's hardly any internet reception. And I was like, oh, here's a spot where I get internet. And so I was downloading my emails for the night and my business partner's email came through and the title was "The Business is at a Crossroads." And essentially what he was saying is like, whatever you choose to do, if you choose, you know, to move back to Australia or you want to move a design team to New York, like whatever you want to do, we will build a team around you to support you. I understand you're seeking your creativity back right now. Let us know what we can do to help you because we're here to help. And as I stopped to read the email with the title "Business is at a Crossroads," I looked up and I was actually standing on campus at a physical crossroads. So the road to the left was the main road around campus and, you know, it was the logical path to take. It had these beautiful, big, strong pine trees. You could see where the path led. It was, you know, very, very logical path to take. And then the path to my right was not really a path at all. It was like a wood chip, you know, winding path that went into through the veggie garden and through the rose garden. And, you know, it was a bit messy, but a much more creative path. And in that moment when, you know, the business is at a crossroads, I'm sitting at a crossroads, I just felt this voice. And I say felt because I didn't hear it. I felt it. And along the lines of, it's time to close. And it was as calm and as quiet as that. And it was just this relief that kind of washed over me. And I was like, all right, well, this, you know, this decision's far greater than just myself. We had a quite a big team. And so what I did is I didn't tell anyone for 2 weeks and I woke up every morning pretending that I'd already implemented the decision. And I'd ask myself every morning, you don't have a company anymore. How does that feel? And I didn't ask myself what I thought about it because if I had to put it through that thinking filter, you know, there was no logic to what I was doing. And, you know, it was very easy to talk myself out of it because there was no logic, but it was such a feeling that I just knew it was the right decision. And I never looked back from that day. And even, you know, to this point today, I hand on my heart, I don't regret closing instead of selling. And it was 1,000% the right decision to do that.
Like a couple of things that resonate. Like I did the same. I had a business in fundraising, it was much smaller than yours, just saying, but it was still like it was a baby that I'd worked on for a really long time. And so to close that, but actually to get a sense of relief when that decision was made was really interesting. It's like, oh, okay, that needed to happen. And the other one that resonated with me was I left my job because I had a really good, you know, I was general manager of a construction company in my late 20s, which was like about as good as I could get. And it was career wise. And I'm like, actually, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. I don't want to work 7 to 7 and I want to be around the kids and the family and my priorities are different to this. And so to kind of go, oh, I'm going to resign. And I think people come to these crossroads and there's kind of the logical path, but then there's this other path that feels like it's going to be so much harder or it's unknown, but it might light you up and you just don't know what the opportunity is if you continue down that safe path. So,
and it is crossroads. I know, you know, I was talking about a physical one, but even when you use that, we're at a crossroads every day in every decision, right? And then we get to those big milestone ones. You just phrased it so perfectly, because when we stand there, we have this decision, I think, between fear and faith. And fear, when I talk about fear, it's the fear of, well, what, I don't know what's going to be down that path. Like, I'm just going to stay where I am, because the fear is like, well, I know even if I'm in a job that's uninspiring, if I'm in a toxic relationship, if I'm in something where it's time to leave, I don't know where I'm going, because where I am now, even if it's not right for me, it feels safe because I know it. And I think that's a really dangerous mindset that we get ourselves in, whereas opposed to the leap of faith, as we call it, it's like, I know there's something out there that's for me, but I just don't know what it is yet. And I know I have to take that leap of faith, which is, you know, one of the scariest things to do, but that's where the path rises up to meet us. But I think that's by far the scariest option, but the other one's driven by fear of the unknown.
Yeah, it's that concept of staying in a job that doesn't light you up. I don't understand it from my point of view, but I get a lot of people do it. I guess that just says where they're comfortable in, but you only get, I mean, we were speaking about this before, you only get one life, one opportunity, and it goes so quickly. How can you spend it doing something that you're not? I mean, I guess I'm really fortunate, like it's worked out well and I've got the value of hindsight for us. We're living a pretty blessed life, but tell us about, I guess, you know, you've closed this, I'm going to call it an empire, and you've closed it, not sold it. And I know it had your name, but it's also really interesting because it was then not about the money and it was about kind of starting a new journey. So tell us what's happened since then.
I purposely didn't ask how much I would get if I sold it, because it's a trillion, and people don't believe when I say, but I'm like, I just have no interest in handing this baby that I've created for 15 years and myself and some incredible women that worked along the way over to someone else to see what they would do with it. So I wanted to retain the rights to my name. I wanted, you know, the database and things that we had built over that time. Obviously I would inherit that. While that's not financial, it has a currency against it. And I knew that as an individual, I had much more to give creatively. It was something else. It wasn't jewelry. And I didn't know what it was at that point, but I knew that I had exhausted the journey on jewelry for where I wanted to go. So since then I wrote the book, which I really threw myself into kind of, you know, the week after we closed. And, you know, it was meant to come out at this time last year. So obviously with COVID, we pushed it back because we wanted to tour the book. And in that time, I've really thrown myself back into the Samantha Wills Foundation. And, you know, if the book is the story and the handing over of, you know, kind of more that romantic element of storytelling, then the foundation is very much the tangible. So it's, you know, where creative entrepreneurs can get resources, they get grant information, they connect with community on there. So we're running a lot of workshops and masterclasses on there that really give that tangible toolbox for creative entrepreneurs.
And that's so good to be able to give back from that experience and to share, I guess, your lessons and your learnings.
That is truly what lights me up at this point in time. And it's feels like a real honor to be able to do that.
So you might have had the plan. Did you have the plan or an inkling of the plan for the book, obviously, when you closed, but did you have the plan to help other women or?
Yeah, I mean, in my work in the last probably 5 years really extended out beyond just jewellery design. So I was doing a lot of public speaking. As I said, when I launched the foundation in 2016, that came with a different path, which I really enjoyed, which was, you know, sharing the highs and lows of business, and specifically as it related to women in business. And I actually had interest from publishers wanting me to write a book before I closed the business. So I actually like did a plot twist on myself, because I started putting pen to paper before I even decided to close. So it was going to be, you know, a hardcore kind of very business memoir. Then when I made the decision to close, I knew it had to go a bit deeper personally on that.
Yeah, and I think the depth of the story, and I won't give it away because you do need to go buy the book and read it. I guess it's that personal journey and understanding how that happened, and I guess the sacrifices that came along the way, that then you almost needed the freedom to be away from the business to pursue?
Yeah, and you know, I find even from sharing on social media, I find it very hard to share things that I'm currently in at the time. Like I prefer to kind of work through them or work through the bigger part of them and then be able to reflect and share if I think it's going to be helpful to others. So that space was good to write it. And also to be able to, the hindsight and perspective, to be able to go back and revisit parts on that journey. Because I think as creative entrepreneurs, no matter what field you're in, you know, we're driven on what's next, what's the next thing, what can I create now, what's that next, which is, you know, what fuels us. But I think it's also what floors us in a way if we're not taking time to stop in those moments and be in those moments. And I know that I was incredibly guilty of that over the time. And in the end, it just became a hamster wheel of chasing what was next. So to be able to revisit that journey and sit in those moments longer now has been really lovely.
Yeah. And I thank you for kind of doing that and sharing it, because it is really personal and it is really hard to put things in the world about yourself that don't paint you in a perfect light. I mean, we've all got aspects of our personality that we wish we had better control of, or, you know, but the things that drive you and make you amazing give you a flip side. So there's never quite a balance, right? So an entrepreneur really driven, next, hasn't spent the time to be able to reflect. And now you were actually reflecting because you built in those things where you're doing that, you know, and you've worked with a mentor to help you reflect and help you grow. So you're really clever. Like you're really smart in the way you structure things around you, but there's always room for improvement. And I don't think you can ever stop.
No, I think it's definitely a life work. And I think that going back to the crossroads and, you know, when we're standing at those crossroads and what's whispering to us, I think that's our biggest life work, is to lean into that intuition voice. Because we've, you know, we know what the word intuition means from when we're a child, but we've been raised that if we can't logically explain something, that it probably isn't real. And I think that that's the biggest lesson for me throughout this journey and revisiting the journey, and the things that I wish I had put around me sooner. I wish I had listened or cultivated that intuition and that intuitive voice more.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us today. And I guess if anyone wants to learn more, you can get Of Gold and Dust at any big, amazing bookstore. It's out now, and it's definitely around. And I had to say it was gripping. I read it in a very short amount of time because I was really interested to hear about how you navigated it, all the rises and falls of life, really.
Thank you. And yeah, I thank you for having me on today. I absolutely love what you guys do, and congratulations on your book as well. So look at us being all booky.
Right? Who would have thought we could write a book? Thank you so much, and we'll speak soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Building with Build Her. We'd love for you to spread the word.
For show notes, links and downloads and other awesome resources and freebies, head to buildhercollective.com.au. And don't forget, that's Build Her with an H-E-R.
And if you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much to both of us if you could take a minute or two to leave a review.
And don't forget to subscribe so you can listen next time as we talk all things building and women making their mark in the building industry.